Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
Hey, good morning to you. 908 on KDXU. I'm Andy Griffin. Thanks for tuning in to the program. And I'm feeling a little refreshed, sort of. I'll explain here in a second. We also have a guest that we'll have on here in just a second. I wanted to talk about my weekend a little bit, though. It's funny, the boss came in on Friday and said, hey, anything I can do for you, which bosses usually say that and don't mean it, because that's how bosses are, right? But the boss came in and said, anything I can do for you? I said, yeah, it should be nice to get it out of the heat. And he's like, well, let me make some phone calls. Well, before the afternoon was over, I had a night stay at Ruby's Inn at Bryce Canyon and got to go see the Bryce Canyon Wranglers up there and perform a country show and a nice dinner out there and everything. And I have to say, it was fantastic. And if you, like I was the other day, are just kind of sick of the heat and just can't stand it anymore, man, I highly recommend you go up there to Ruby's Inn and just enjoy the cooler air. The hottest it got the whole weekend that we were up there was, it got up to like 87, I think, or something. And when we got up yesterday morning to go get breakfast, it was 60 degrees, and my wife was a little chilly. So I was like, you know, there's a sweatshirt in the car if you want. No, she was fine. But, yeah, if you want to escape the heat, I, like I said, I had a fantastic time. The Bryce Canyon Wranglers were amazing. The food was on point. I had a flat iron steak, and my wife had the cowboy play, which included pulled pork and chicken, and it was phenomenal. So if you get a chance to get up there to Ruby's Inn, I highly recommend it. I'm sort of refreshed. The good news, of course, I got it out of the hot tempers. Bad news is my wife, she kicked my butt as far as making me go do stuff and everything. And so I woke up yesterday morning, my knees were screaming at me, and they're like, what did you do? But I'm alive. John Green is here. John is former professor at Brigham Young University and also a former member of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. Is that right, John?
Yeah.
Yeah. How long were you? Well, what years were you in the choir?
1991 to 2000.
91 to 2000. Okay. Yeah.
My last concert was at, it was the first concert in the conference center.
Oh, okay. Very cool. Very cool.
It was President Hinckley's 95th birthday party.
Oh, wow.
A lot of famous people there.
Yeah, did you, the choir tends to go on some trips occasionally. Did you go somewhere with the choir? Did you go on some trips?
I loved going to the East Coast and Canada, and we had a cruise on the Mediterranean, and we hit all the important cities on the northern part
of
the
Tabernacle Choir cruise.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
I guess they made you sing for your your trip, though. Yeah,
yeah,
everywhere you went, you guys sang.
Yeah, it was
great.
Yeah.
That is so cool. And I was telling you before we turned on the microphones that my brother has been a producer of the Tabernacle Choir.
I didn't know that was your brother. I've seen him
20-something years he's been doing that.
He's great at pointing his fingers at things.
That's his job. He's you here, you go there. It's time for this. 30 seconds, you know, stuff
yeah,
like that.
Exactly.
So that's my brother, and I'm very, very proud of him. He's a good guy.
Oh, yeah.
He's the same brother that took that photo behind me there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
I love
he's
that.
Big time
yeah.
into photography. So... John has a special program coming up on the 4th of July, that night at 7 o'clock. And we're going to talk about that some more in a minute. I do want to talk a little bit more about John's work history. You were a professor at BYU, right?
35 years, from 1970 to 2005.
What did you teach?
They call it humanities. Nobody knows what humanities even means except...
I know, humanities, that's about being human, right?
It's
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody's that. No, it's basically it's cultural history. Actually, two parts. The cultural history is a two semester course. 201 is the beginnings to the Renaissance, and the 202 is from the Renaissance to the present. We talk about art, and
so
all
it's
of
a
the
little
arts.
Bit kind of like history, but not.
Well, it's history, but it's history with a artistic overlay. So we talk about each of the major fine arts in terms of their historical styles.
Okay,
like say Greek. Classicism, Roman realism, and Renaissance humanitarianism, and so on.
Okay.
So it's just a very wonderful class. But my favorite class was the what I call the monster class. I taught 300 students in the big auditorium.
The 101, the one that 101, a lot of the freshmen had to take.
Yeah, especially the hayseeds from Payson. Those are the ones I was trying to reach, uh-huh. and especially to turn them on to opera, but that was almost impossible.
Wait a second. A country boy, Hayseed, literally farmed hay. Maybe a kid from Rupert, Idaho, that farmed potatoes and laid pipe.
Yep.
And you're trying to teach them opera?
Yeah.
How did that go?
Not so well. It's the one thing I didn't convert them to. But I had students that would come back and say, I was in a wreck because I was driving down my main street in my little town and looking at the neoclassical architecture, and I ran into somebody. I was looking at the buildings, not the road.
You're to blame for a lot of low speed crashes, right, apparently, over the years. But So
anyway, it was good.
A big part of that is music. Music is one of the arts. Tell us how music factored into your teaching humanities.
Well, I was converted. You love classical music. You just told me that. And I love classical music.
I began in fourth grade
with Mrs. Boyack. I wish you were here and listening to this, because I went to visit her once when she was very old. She would play Schubert's music in our class and during our little rest time between the morning and the afternoon, like during lunchtime.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew to love his music. And so I came back and I said, Mrs. Boyack, you changed my life.
Hmm.
I went into music and to the other arts because of you. And she said, what? She couldn't believe it.
Well, first she said, who are you?
Yeah.
And then she said, what?
No, she knew me because her son, Alan, died recently, was a lawyer in town, and he was a good friend of mine. And so I got acquainted with him. And so that was, you know, our relationship. But anyway, she said, you're the first person that ever came back and said I made a difference in their life, and it just about undid me. I thought, what? My favorite teacher, and nobody knows. She doesn't know the impact she's had on her students because they never told her.
That's amazing, actually.
That's just unacceptable. So I've been trying to run down my old professors and tell them how much I appreciated what they did for me.
As a professor yourself, have people come back to you and said, yeah, you really, you know, made my life better?
It made my day every time that happens. I get letters. I meet them on the street. I don't know who they are because I have such big classes. I don't remember them, but they remember me, and I'm glad that I did had a good impact on them. That their life is richer because they love the good, the true, and the beautiful. That's what Socrates says is what everybody should seek for. The good, the true, and the beautiful.
The good, the true, the beautiful.
I mean, you can divide everything into one of those three categories.
I love it. Yeah. I would say, as I look back, John, I look back and I think, you know, the teachers that had the biggest impact on me, it wasn't so much what they taught as how who they were and how they taught and what, you know what I mean? The ones that really made a difference for me are the ones that I really felt like they cared about me.
That's right.
And I remember I had, and I hate to go to the negative side, but I had an English teacher, and it was basically, you're going to learn this period. I'm going to force it down your throat no matter what you want. And that was such a negative. And I remember her today, but not in a good way.
I remember my least favorite religion teacher at BYU.
Mm-hmm.
I won't say his name, of course, but he taught religion like he was teaching physics.
Mm.
I mean, just the facts, folks, just the facts. And I thought, where's the heart? Mm-hmm. Where's the spirit here?
Yeah, no, you're right. So. You're absolutely right. So music and humanities, and how important has music been in the development of mankind, in who we are today?
Hugely important.
I know that's a big question, but
in primitive cultures, it is right up there with the top because that's what they do. Where they dance, they need music. When they sing, they need music. And it's mostly percussive stuff in the really primitive cultures, but they all have it. And that's where it begins. I don't know where it begins. I guess it begins before we got here. But for sure, everybody resonates to music. And I think part of the reason is the music doesn't have to be processed by the brain.
Hmm.
See, if you want to talk about poetry, for example, you have to know the language. You have to know the something about poetry to appreciate it. But with music, it hits you right where you live.
Right.
Goes right to the heart. So I love it. I love that about music.
You know what's really cool is, so I was talking about going up to Ruby's Inn and to Ebenezer's Barn and Grill and the dinner and a show kind of thing I went to the other night. And it was interesting. They would play a song that everybody knew, you know, King of the Road, you know, the songs like that.
Those and pop songs.
Everyone was it wasn't a bunch of people sitting at a table that didn't know. And there were people there from France and Italy. I mean, there were people from all over the world in this room visiting Bryce Canyon on vacation. Mm-hmm. But when they started playing a song that just about everyone knew, they played The Gambler by Kenny Rogers, you know, and some of these other songs that everybody knew. And people were singing along. And it wasn't, like I said, it wasn't one of a bunch of tables of people that didn't know each other. It was one group of people feeling kind of the same thing. It was pretty cool.
I think that is really important to think about, because that brings us together.
Yeah.
Our associations with particular kinds of music is just part of what makes us like each other.
So you were able to obviously parlay that into a successful time in the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. Are you an instrumentalist? Are you just a singer? Do you play piano? Do you play other instruments?
My mom made me take lessons when I was 7, and I finally learned to like the music, and I was pretty good.
Yeah.
In fact, Bruce Hafen and I once played a two piano duet in the college when we were there together.
Really? Wow.
Of Rhapsody in Blue by Gershwin, and mm-hmm. it brought the mm-hmm. house down. I couldn't believe it. Good. I've heard a lot of applause because I've been on the stage quite a bit in my life, but that was just like,
oh, wow, just explosion, huh?
My old friends that went to Dixie, they say, I would say, what's the most memorable thing? And they would say, well, it's probably when you and Bruce played that duet.
That's pretty cool.
Isn't that cool? I just love that. But that's what music does.
It brings
us together.
I've talked about this on the show before, but I can talk in front of you. 10,000 people, whatever. I'm fine. I can talk and talk and talk, and that's what I do for a living, right? But singing in front of people, for me, is
It's just the opposite
scary.
For me. If I can sing, I'm okay. In fact, my wife has a little hard of hearing, so if I could sing to her, she could hear my voice just fine. But when I speak, and you can probably tell, I have a fairly soft voice.
Right.
If I sang to her, she'd never worry about whether she could hear me or not.
Did you have to wear a microphone in those big lecture halls at BYU? Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Couldn't had to be able to hear you on the back.
You know what I did? Just because I wanted to make it more of a one-on-one thing, I would learn their names. I would take a video.
With hundreds of students?
300 students. And I finally got at the end, at the middle of the class, I could remember the names. One guy was sitting in the back row one day reading a newspaper, and I says, Fred, put that paper down. And he didn't.
He's like, what?
He never did that again.
How could you know my name? Holy cow.
So it was cool.
That is pretty amazing.
To establish some kind of connection with him. Because I discovered that the people that I knew that had kids in my class, they did the best. And I thought, why is that? It's not because my friends are necessarily brighter. It's because I know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And they know that I know. So they try harder.
That's a good point.
Yeah,
that's
a good point. Important for
I will tell you this. I went to college, and I was in many of those big lecture halls.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember a professor ever even trying to learn our names, much less getting them.
It was worth it. Really.
Was it? That's
the
amazing.
The ripple effect was great.
A lot of work. What, would you take pictures of them all and put the name to the picture?
I take a video of them and where they came from, so then I try to connect their name to the place, and I was able to do it pretty well. After the semester, it was like my hard drive erased. I didn't remember their names, but I could recognize their faces oftentimes. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. good.
That's amazing. It really is that you could remember all that.
Yeah.
I remember my dad was a bishop of a student ward, and he actually did something very similar where he'd get a picture and write a little bio about it, and he'd put them on the wall in his office.
Just like
and every day
mission president.
Yeah, every day he would practice it,
that
face and that name and where they were from.
Bless his heart. Yeah, that's
like
terrific.
That. Yeah.
And I must say something about the Tabernacle Choir. When I Craig Jessup was the director, and then he left, and I was just crestfallen because he was the one who we tried like crazy to sing well for him, because he would move his head around because he couldn't see somebody behind somebody else that was taller in front of him in the row. And so that was a sign of that he really cared about each of us. Yeah,
it really was. That's cool. Let's talk about the program a little bit now.
Okay.
America the Beautiful, in God We Trust. You said something when you first got here. You said we're kind of losing our foundation. It's crumbling a little bit in America. What did you mean by that?
Well, I wrote this down. I knew you were going to ask me that question, so I wrote my answer right here. Throughout the past 4 years of growing political turmoil and real threats to our sovereignty as a nation, I made a list of some of these imminent threats to our country and to ourselves. Failing economy, failing schools, open borders, collapsing inner cities, anti-Semitism, the collapse of congressional compromise, interior weaponization of government agencies to destroy the balance of power, and foreign threats to our nation. And I thought, wow, that and probably more.
Yeah.
And I have felt sort of helpless. What can I do to push back against this stuff? And I discovered slowly over the last few weeks that I could do this. I know how to make. I taught with PowerPoint when I was teaching those big classes, and so I used that skill to develop this program. And I think it's really a good one. Has a lot of video clips that kind of like music hit you in the solar plexus.
Let's do the basics. First of all, this program is July 4th, so yes. The 4th of July, and it's at 7 o'clock at night, and it's at the LDS Stake Center east of the St. George Temple.
Just across the street. Right.
Now, one thing I want to point out to people, and obviously this is not a religious show here on KDXU. This is not a religious show on the 4th of July either. There is some religion involved, and of course we have an opening and closing prayer, but it's not, this isn't a show about Joseph Smith or anything like that. This is a show
about
America.
Our country.
Yeah.
And about how our country is losing its moorings, basically.
Yeah.
And how we can re-establish that.
In God we trust is what we're looking for.
Exactly.
Right? All right. Give us a little taste of some of the things that we are to expect when we, and full disclosure here right up front, I will be narrating some of it. I will be there and then we'll be a part of it. And I'm excited to be a part of it. I'm glad. Yeah. I'm so grateful that you asked me. Yeah. But what else can we expect?
Well, you'll get a sense of the importance of George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and Abraham Lincoln. The Germans say, alle guten Dinge sind drei. I was on a mission in Germany, okay. Which means all good things come in threes.
Okay, all right.
So we've got three famous heroes. We've got three hymns at the first and three more important ones at the end. And anyway, so we're going to be talking about George Washington's letter to Colonel Nicola, who wanted him to be king.
Yeah,
and you read the letter.
George
says,
didn't like
no
that.
No way. That, he says that is not acceptable. Yeah. And then we're going to have a little bit of Thomas Jefferson's Declaration of Independence, some memorable quotes there, and then we're going to have you read the whole Gettysburg Address by Abraham Lincoln.
And I will mention, it's actually not that long.
No.
People are like, oh, the whole thing. No, we're not talking about the Declaration of Independence. It's pretty quick.
And this guy gave a two-hour lecture before.
Yeah, we kind of laughed about that. So Abraham Lincoln's getting ready to talk, right? He's got this Gettysburg Address, which is fairly short. He's sitting there, and he's next after this guy.
Right.
So he's sitting there holding his paperwork, and he's like, okay, here we go. Any minute now. And the guy talked for 2 hours.
2 hours. Yeah. Anyway, that's crazy.
I think, I don't know how long it was, if it was always supposed to only be 5 minutes, but he probably recognized, I better cut mine down. This guy took too much time.
Yeah, right. Well, and then we're going to talk a little bit about the Emancipation Proclamation and the blacks. There'll be a little video clip on... They'll have a dream speech by Martin Luther King.
Yeah, very good speech.
That's
yeah.
really powerful. And then we're going to see the Tab Choir singing in front of the stand where President...
Ronald Reagan
is getting ready to be inaugurated president back in 1984. And I'm telling you, it blew him away.
It's
you
powerful.
Could see him. Everybody, actually, was just so moved by the Battle Hymn of the Republic, sung at full tilt with the Tabernacle Choir on a couple of, floats.
When you see Ronald Reagan wiping tears from his eyes, it already is coming home to you, but when you see that, you're like, wow, this was phenomenal.
And he talks about it. He says, this is the my favorite part of the inauguration, was listening to the choir sing to me.
Yeah. That's really cool.
That's cool.
Now, tell us about this man, the Amazing Grace guy.
Oh, my gosh. He is so
I can't remember
wonderful.
His name now.
His name is Winfrey... let me just get it really
Yeah,
quick.
We got to look it up because it was a very touching portion of the I got a sneak preview of the program, by the way, last week, and so for me I'm going off a memory, but there are some amazing moments, and this guy gives a speech in Carnegie Hall, and as part of the speech he actually sings the song, I believe it's Amazing Grace.
Amazing Grace, and it is amazing to listen to him sing because he really is good.
And Amazing Grace is one of those they call white spiritual, and that's because the words were written by a white man, but the tune is actually, we believe, taken from the slave ships, right? The belly of the slave ships,
that's
the slave
right.
singing?
He probably got it from hearing the, because he was, before he became a Christian, he was a slave ship.
John Newton,
captain.
Yeah.
Yeah, John Newton. So, yeah, it's an amazing experience.
Did you find that guy's name yet? It escapes me.
It's right on the Winfrey Phipps.
Phipps, that's what it is. I knew it was double.
Winfrey Phipps. I mean, what a crazy name that is. But, yeah, he does a great job, not only of explaining that almost all of the Negro spirituals are played on the black notes of the piano keyboard.
I didn't even think about that.
The black notes. And he makes a big deal of the black notes. That's the black scale. It's a pentatonic scale.
Yeah.
And whether it's, any of those hymns.
Yeah.
Are played on those five black notes.
Five black keys on the piano.
Swing low, sweet chariot. Da, da, yeah. da. That's a pentatonic scale.
Amazing.
Isn't that crazy?
Never thought about that.
And then he sings
before.
It. And yeah. boy, it brings the house down.
Yeah.
He has a gorgeous baritone voice.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. Anyway, we're gonna show a clip of that so that people can get a sense of his power.
And then toward the end of the program, you have, and I don't know if people remember this, I don't know how long ago it was, but there was a 7-year-old girl, Asian girl, I'm not sure if she was Korean or Japanese or what she was, but she's originally, but she was an American,
yeah.
and she sang the national anthem at I believe it was a soccer match.
Soccer match between Seattle and L.A.
And it was...
And when she got to the bombs bursting in there, they shot off a bunch of fireworks.
And it didn't scare her. She was ready for it.
She sang like you can't believe. I just love to listen to her sing that song.
After you played it for me, and I remember the first time hearing it too, I thought to myself, she didn't sing the song. She attacked the song.
That's right.
She gave every inch of her.
Yeah. And even to growling in a particular part or two.
Yeah.
It was great. Loved it.
All part of this big program, America the Beautiful, In God We Trust. Again, it's this Thursday night, 4th of July, at 7 o'clock at the LDS Stake Center, which is east of the historic St. George Temple, right?
Yeah.
It's free. It doesn't cost anything,
and
I believe.
And guess what? We entice all of the missionaries to come in this zone because we promised them they'd have... The most American thing of all is apple pie.
Apple pie.
So all pies are going to be there in the cultural hall for people to enjoy.
Incredible. So we invite folks
to
come.
Bring your kids.
Yeah. I think it's going to be an amazing program. Well, I know it is because I already saw it, but I think with adding the live music, I didn't see the live music part of it. Yeah. I think it's going to be amazing. Well, John, thanks for coming over
and spending a few minutes with us. I appreciate this opportunity, and we hope you all come.
Looking forward to Thursday night. Again, 7 o'clock, 4th of July at the LDS Stake Center. It is not a religious program, although there's an opening and closing prayer, and there's a couple of religious songs in there. It's really about America. It's about God. It's about In God We Trust.
Exactly.
It's not a Mormon show. It's just a really nice American show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Looking forward to it, John. Sure appreciate it.
Thank you.
Good to talk to you today, and we will see you on Wednesday because we're going to have a rehearsal Wednesday, but then we'll see you for real on Thursday night.
Thank you.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
9:35 on KDXU. Good morning. I'm Andy. Stockton Myers is here as well. Hi, Stockton. You doing okay, man?
Yeah, I'm doing great. Just a little hot out there.
Mello poked her head in, and you know what she said? She said, I'm going to get a massage right now, so I'll think about you guys while I'm laying on the table. Yeah, you will not.
Yeah, no, that's going to be the last thing on your mind.
Tough deal. Ever had a massage, Stockton?
Oh, you better believe
I
have.
You're a massage guy, okay.
Oh, well, the thing is that my mom and dad get, like, regular massages every week.
Okay.
And every now and again, they just can't do it, and so they're like, all right, throw it on Stockton. And so I'm like,
throw it on Stockton.
What a shame. I have to go get a nice massage. Granted, it was really, I actually didn't like massages until I started drinking more water. Because if you don't drink enough water after you get a massage, you're done.
Really?
Yeah.
So let me, I'm going to approach this carefully. I know there are a lot of people that love massages.
Yeah.
I've only had one in my life and I thought it was a little...
It's not for everyone.
A little weird.
No, it's absolutely not for everyone. What kind of massage was it?
I don't know.
Was it just like the one that you see around town? You just get in your skivvies, let your and then they just rub it out.
I mean, I've had other people I had some when I was trying to figure out what's wrong with my leg. I had some people that massaged my leg on a regular basis trying to get that. But as far as a full body massage, I only did it one time, and I didn't love it. So I don't know if that was like a personal problem or
I don't know. It's just up to the person. I think it's not. You should feel no shame. shame in that you don't like massages.
I don't think it was that. I wasn't like ashamed of my body or worried about being touched or anything like that. I just like
it didn't feel good.
It took an hour and they massaged my muscles and I didn't really feel a whole ton better after than I did before. So right. And I spent $100 on it, you know. I was like, eh, I don't know.
Yeah, the costs and the benefits are just a little skewed.
I think it's a personal thing, I guess. Yeah. Eat a good meal. I might love a steak and there are other people that I hate steak, you know,
hate cheese. Yeah. So, everyone and their dog loves cheese, especially dogs. Dogs love that cheese.
Yeah, you're right about that. So, hey, everybody's different. Hey, we talked earlier about Elvis's blue suede shoes, right?
Yeah.
So Elvis wore these blue suede shoes when he first made one of his very first television performances and sang blue suede shoes and wore the blue suede shoes that he was singing about.
Yes.
He wore it several other times, and then right before he went into the Army, I don't know if you knew this, but Elvis served in the Army.
Yeah, he got
them. He gave his blue suede shoes to his best friend, said, here, you can have these. Well, his best friend, having the foresight to go, okay, I could wear these shoes, but wait a minute, Elvis wore these shoes. I think I'm going to hang on to them. And now, that was in 58. So that was, 80 years ago or something? No, 70 years ago, almost 70 years ago, his friend put the shoes up for auction. Now, you and I speculated, we thought they'd go for a lot of money.
It's Elvis for Pete's.
Yeah.
The king of rock.
I was thinking $1 million or something, you know.
I was thinking even more. Yeah. I was thinking like $3 million.
So the reserve, the minimum that you could bid was $70,000. And I'm like, okay, well they're gonna blow that. You know, it's probably be 10 times that or 20 times that. Or
it didn't even go up two times.
Yeah, just barely over two times. $150,000.
$150,000.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So surprising a little bit that.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, like, imagine, what about, like, Michael Jackson's shoes? You know what I mean? With that? Does Michael Jackson's shoes have more value than Elvis's? Or what about, like...
I'd rather have Elvis's shoes.
Well, like, what if... I wonder, is it just because the blue suede shoes aren't as iconic with Elvis's image? Like, what if he had... What if they sold his, like, or auctioned off his... crazy glittery coat that he had in the latter part of his career. What do you think that would sell better?
Great question. Didn't he used to drive a pink Cadillac too?
That's true. Yeah, he did.
Maybe the Cadillac could be worth more.
You think the toilet he died on would be worth more? Sorry, that's dark. That's dark. But
yeah, you can own Elvis's throne.
Yeah. Oh.
Today. Yeah.
His banana and chocolate sandwiches.
And there was a story, by the way, on the news today about the cost of a hamburger on the 4th of July. Apparently, it's going to cost more.
All in total, the price of our burger rose by 4 cents, $2.22 per burger.
Now, that's just the hamburger, according to the USDA.
That doesn't count for the bun, the toppings, or the cheese, or the bacon, or anything like that.
Yeah, like, I just, and I'm like, wait, what?
And heaven forbid you get, like, a double, you know?
Yeah. So putting on a barbecue is no cheap affair anymore, apparently.
Didn't we read a story recently about the hot dogs and how those are getting more expensive? Or was that just how many hot dogs an average American eats a year?
I don't think we got into prices, but yeah, we spent some time on hot dog etiquette and you and I don't eat like the average American the number of hot dogs.
No, we don't.
Because it's about one every other day, basically.
And
every third day or something.
We're also in the minority, I guess, in Americans where... Or at least in terms of etiquette, we still put ketchup on our hot dogs.
Mm-hmm.
When apparently that's a kid thing to do.
Apparently, yes. We are children, you and I.
Yeah, and I'm like, no, you get the ketchup, you get the relish, and then that's it for me. You know what I mean?
I like to, I would probably be crucified in the hot dog circles if there were such a thing. I guess I like to put nacho cheese on my hot dog.
No, there's nothing wrong with that.
And nacho cheese and a little ketchup. Maybe not with the nacho cheese, but if I don't have nacho cheese, barbecue sauce on the hot dog.
So it's funny you say that, because when I was in school and back in my cafeteria days, which wasn't very long. Once I learned how to drive, or I was like in walking distance of a good place. Yeah. Oh, I was like, never again. But one of the most common items you would see for school lunches was hot dogs paired with nacho cheese sauce.
Mm.
So I don't think that's strange. Granted, what was strange about the cafeteria item was that it wasn't served on a hot dog bun. It was served on like a normal piece of bread that was just folded over.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm like, wow, okay, way to you know, cut costs, guys.
Whatever it takes, I guess. We had the last two Tuesdays, our guy at work here, Ike is his name,
yes,
has been presenting a special food day on Tuesdays.
Ah.
And at lunchtime, 2 weeks ago, he served hot dogs. It was actually the day
we did it.
The hot dog etiquette thing. And he said he got the idea. He was at a live remote, which is, you know, where radio guys will go to a remote and they'll go on the air and talk about where they are. You know, they call them live remotes in the business. And he said they had talked about hot dogs at this remote. They were giving away hot dogs. And the guy, he just had an electric grill plate and was cooking hot dogs there with, you know, hot dogs and grilled onions, and that was it, and barbecue sauce. And he said he got the idea that he was going to do that at work, and son of a gun if he didn't do it. Way to go, Ike. And then last Tuesday, it was Nacho Tuesday. Mm. And, okay, I was thinking, okay, he's going to serve chips. There'll be maybe some hamburger and some fixings or whatever. You make your own nachos. No, he laid out foil at about a 6-foot-long trough of foil on the counter out there, mm-hmm. and had a 6-foot-long pile of nachos.
Oh, wow. So
he wasn't kidding around, man.
Gotcha. You ordered just a giant order of that from, like, Taco Bell or something like
that. And so when I first went over there, I got there toward the beginning, and he was like, all right, everybody, just pick a spot and start, you know, just going down on the area.
What, like it was a puzzle that you pick at it for the first day?
And he was like, let me, and he had a map. He's like, okay, this end has jalapenos, this end has sour cream, and this part here has extra, you know, whatever, olives or whatever.
It was like a Venn diagram where everything collided in the middle.
There was. But then toward the end, a couple of people came late, and he got tired of explaining everything, and we had all troughed out. We had all gotten full.
Yeah.
The people that came late had plates, and they were like, how do I get this? And we're like, well, you can just eat from the trough. And they were like, nah, I'm going to put it on plate. And they would scrape big piles of it onto their plate and then leave.
Oh.
So kind of ruin the
experience.
Festive, festive experience. But, yeah.
It's like if you went to one of the hibachi places we have in town.
Oh, yeah, and where they throw food at you.
Yeah, they throw food at you, and it's just like, it's like you took your fork and you would, like, while they're cooking, just take the rice that you're making and just eat it. It's like, oh, yeah, that's good. Thanks.
We're going to take a break. We've got more to talk about when we come back. I guess in bringing up the whole Food Tuesday, tomorrow is Tuesday.
Yes.
And nobody has volunteered to take the proverbial bull by the horns. And so I'm thinking I might have to jump in there.
Does that mean you're going to smoke something?
Maybe, yeah. Mm. I might smoke some meat. Because we've had Hot Dog Tuesday and we've had Nacho Tuesday. Maybe Smoked Meat Tuesday tomorrow.
Yeah, brisket.
I will keep you. Well, no, I can't afford that. Brisket's like $120, $140 each.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So I might have to pull pork. I can afford a pork shoulder.
That's not a problem.
That's pretty good, yeah. So we'll be right back. This is the Andy Griffin Show on KDXU.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
All right, push the right button there. There we go. Good morning to you, 9:50 on KDXU. A couple of things real quick. I want to talk about murder in a second. We'll get Stockton's insight a little bit on that. But a ruling has come down today. I'm just going to read it briefly, read part of it anyway. Under our constitutional structure of separated powers, the nature of presidential power entitles a former president to absolute immunity from criminal prosecution for actions within his conclusive and preclusive constitutional authority, and he is entitled to at least presumptive immunity from prosecution for all his official acts. That was put before the Supreme Court, and you can glean from that what you will, but basically a victory for Trump in the battle to help people understand that presidents need, in order in the execution of their duties, sometimes need to do things that don't necessarily fit in the exact way laws are written. So, and I'm gonna leave it at that. All right. The original guest that was going to be on the second half hour on Monday, a guy by the name of Howard Bloom, he wrote a book about the murders up in at the University of Idaho, up in Moscow, Idaho. Now, I used to live in Idaho, and I used to actually live in Moscow, Idaho, and to say that, you know, in that community, that would be a shock, it was a monumental shock, especially the nature of the murders and the fact that four Idaho students were murdered.
Right.
Basically in their sleep or in the middle of the night when they perhaps were sleeping, and they were murdered by someone that didn't really seem to have a motive except just to kill. And Bloom has written a book about that, and I'm hoping to get him rescheduled for a future program. I think we'll be able to get that done, but it unfortunately brought to mind the fact that we have experienced in southern Utah in 1 week two different murder cases, three different people were killed.
Yeah.
And I know you were talking about yesterday, you know, here I am at church and I, all of a sudden, you know, my phone blows up and there's, you know, there's a murder in Washington City.
And it's just scary because it happened at 2 a.m. So that's like one of my worst fears is just being murdered in the middle of the night. I mean, that's like, come on, anyone's scared of getting murdered, sure. But the fact that it was in the middle of the night and that it may have been a kid that did it, we don't know. Yeah. I mean, all that
the
we know is that
the person in custody is a juvenile.
It's a juvenile suspect, a juvenile male suspect. That's all we know. And they haven't even been officially charged with the crime, so they're still investigating it. But that and then the whole Mia Bailey Wahoo stuff is just Wahoo's an awful way to describe it. It's just... It's tragic beyond belief, and I can't even begin to know what the families are going through at this time for both the Baileys and whoever the victim is in this case as well.
We obviously can't say too much about any specifics, number one, because we don't know a lot of the specifics of them, and number two, because there are legal ramifications if we were to say that person did it. Well,
yes. Oh, my gosh.
You can't really do that in America until they've been convicted, so... we're going to stay out of it. Although I will say in the Mia Bailey case, she has openly admitted
to
did it. This and I would do it again.
But by law, it is one of the joys of living in our country is everyone is given the right to a free trial and also innocent before proven guilty.
Yeah.
And so that's why we always say allegedly, reportedly, is because it still hasn't been declared by law that they did it.
So, Stockton, you grew up here. This is home for you. I've been here longer than you because I've been here longer than you've been alive. But still, you have not known any other community except southern Utah, except for a little time.
A brief stint in Cedar City, about 2 years.
But would you, if someone were to say, well, gosh, this town is going to hell in a handbasket because look at that, three murders in the last week, what would your gut reaction be to that as a St. Georgian?
I would say it's just how population works. I mean, the more people you get in here, the more motivations you put into this melting pot of a town that we have. And I know the elected officials like to go for the small town feel. That's what they always say. I mean, during the city council elections last year, that's what a lot of them were saying. We want to keep the small town feel.
Mayberry, yeah.
But the fact is that we have a lot of people here. We have over, 100,000 people
over
in St. George.
Over 100,000 in the city, 200,000 in the county.
200,000 in the county. And so it's inevitable that you're going to get a couple of bad eggs. And so in that regard, do I feel like, oh my gosh, what happened to my city? No, just because it's not the city's fault in the end, but I don't know. I guess there is that sense of like when I was a kid, my mom was always saying that St. George is one of the safest places to raise a family. Mm. And then you see these types of cases happening. And then, I just, all I can say is Oh, it's sad no matter what.
Yeah.
It's sad no matter what. And
a couple of things worth pointing out.
Yes, please.
Not to contradict you, but a couple of things to point out. Both murders happened in Washington City, not St. George
City.
True.
That's a good point.
I mean, it's a technicality, but.
Call Mayor Staley.
It's true. Yeah. And by the way, the murder that happened Sunday or in the wee hours of Sunday morning. Now, most of us know exit 13. If you go to the very end of the Washington Parkway,
right,
where it feeds to Telegraph, mm-hmm, that, and you look across and to your left, there's a big, I don't know how tall, 2 or 3 story apartment building.
Yes.
That's where the murders happened.
That's Red Rock at Siena Hills.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people, now where is that exactly? So it's basically the intersection of Washington Parkway and Telegraph, just to the kind of southeast of that.
There's actually
northeast, rather.
In the article I wrote yesterday, there's actual the press statement from the WCPD. They gave an actual address for the place. So if you're curious of the exact location, you can check our article and you can find it there. I can't remember off the top of my head.
My daughter actually lives on the other side of Telegraph in one of the apartment buildings on the other side. And my wife, when we first heard about it, was like, oh, that's in our daughter.
Yeah.
That's in our daughter's apartment complex. No, it's actually across Telegraph.
Bart, our boss, our big, the market president here, yeah, he came into my office and he was telling me that his son actually lives in that apartment building.
Where the murder was.
Yeah, and I was like, did he hear the gunshots? And he said, no, he was in Vegas. So I'm like, wow, the one time you want to be in Vegas.
Yeah, seriously.
No, but yeah, it's just, man. I'm looking forward to hearing more details about this, but not in like a sense of excitement, in a sense of just more curiosity of just why this would happen. And if it was a kid that did it, what drove them to do it in the first place?
My wife makes a good point that 99% of murders happen between two people who are either related or know each other very well. And this seemed to happen between neighbors, well-acquainted neighbors.
Yeah.
So, and that we don't know any more than that, but.
Yeah, and unfortunately, since the identity of the man hasn't been confirmed by the authorities, a lot of people have been drawing some interesting, yeah, a lot of speculation saying that maybe they were related and that's why they're awesome, not doing that. But I will say this, as a journalist, first and foremost, we have to rely on the authorities, and we only base things on fact, so you will never see speculation in our news reports.
Read the comments if you want.
Yes, there's plenty of it. There's plenty of it. Just go to the comments.
I agree. In we got to do what's right. We got to make sure that, you know, and not just because we're good guys, but there's some legal ramifications.
Oh, yeah, tons.
If we were to write or talk about some things.
It's called libel and defecation. Well, not defecation.
No, don't do that. Defamation.
Defamation,
yeah. Change that one letter.
You know. That's a Mad Libs bit right there.
All right, real quick, want to wrap up the show. Remind everybody about the Patriotic Program July 4th at 7 p.m. at the LDS Stake Center east of the St. George Temple. Admission is free. There are refreshments, including great old American apple pie afterwards. Thanks to John Green for coming in and talking to us about that for a couple of minutes. And I do want to thank again Ruby Zinn and the Syrett family and just
you make me want to go to it.
Hosting me and... You should go. You get out of the heat, you have an incredible meal, it's great country music, comfortable bed, just a great getaway is what it was. And we left like Saturday at noon, got home Sunday at 1. You know, it was 25 hours, but it was definitely worth it up there. The Ruby's Inn up at Bryce Canyon. And like I said, it didn't get hotter than like 87 or something.
Oh, sounds wonderful.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, everybody, today. Appreciate you all being involved. Stockton, thanks for your help today. Always good to talk to you. And it is Freedom Week in Washington County. God bless America.